reminded of the year 2000, when I was still at university, an eager student of politics studying for my PhD. I applied for a job at NACRO, the National Crime Reduction Charity. And it was my first job. It was the first time reading the report recommendations in preparation for my job interview. And at the time, I remember it made for daunting reading for several reasons, because I was also preparing for an interview, first ever. It was overwhelming to read the depth and scale of failures. I was nervous and worried and about answering difficult questions on the day of my interview in the morning. But that morning, the interview went well, and the person who was on my interview panel is sitting here, Beverly, who was the director of the race unit, which started this work on looking at race inequality issues at NACRO in the early 90s, and I only got to join them in 2000. There began my real job, and since then, since that day, I've worked with wonderful colleagues, many organizations I've worked with who are here today, and I've been involved in monitoring, studying the nature of racial disparities in the criminal justice system. So in the next few minutes, that's my personal side of the reflection, but in the next few minutes, I would like to focus specifically on the inquiry recommendations, so let's get back to it, in relation to Stop and Search in particular, and in highlighting the enduring and emerging issues drawing from our recent work at Stopwatch. Stopwatch, for those of you who do not know, Stopwatch is a coalition of academics, lawyers, young people, civil society organizations. We work with the Traveller Movement, we work with the Children's Rights Alliance England, and also with our black-led organizations in the sector. We also work with young people and other community stakeholders, including parents. Our aim is to promote fair, effective, and accountable policing, and since 2010, we have campaigned against disproportionate use of stop and search, the use of exceptional stop and search powers, and the weakening of associated accountability mechanisms. And I'll say a little bit more about that in relation to the inquiry report 20 years on. Victor has already given us some really interesting slides, so stay with us, and thanks for making the really important points you did earlier, Victor. So our main contention at Stopwatch is that the police use of stop and search remains disproportionately targeted against ethnic and religious minorities as a matter of everyday policing strategy and practice, and that the problem has indeed magnified over the two decades since the publication of the McPherson report. Although the issue of policing and race relations was not the primary focus of the inquiry, it became an important feature in the process, and within the report it was stated if there was one important area of complaint which was universal, it was the issue of stop and search. And this explicit acknowledgement recognized the importance of stop and search to black and minority ethnic communities and the damage it inflicted on police community relations, and we haven't stopped rehearsing that since then. In addition, the experience of black and minority ethnic groups goes beyond the formal stop and search figures recorded under the provisions of the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. And it is in fact conditioned by their experiences of being stopped under traffic legislation. And I was talking about this at lunch with a colleague. Drugs legislation, and also the so-called voluntary stops as well. While there are other factors in play, we are clear that the perception, and this is what the inquiry report said, that the perception and experience of minority communities that discrimination is a major element in the stop and search problem was indeed correct. In the decade following the publication, searches grew exponentially alongside a steadily declining arrest rate and a stubbornly disproportionate focus on black and minority ethnic groups. When rioting broke out in many towns and cities across England in the summer of 2011, there was a palpable sense of deja vu as stop and search was once again widely implicated. The Home Secretary commissioned Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary to carry out its first ever thematic inspection of stop and search following the 2011 riots. Visiting all 43 police forces in England and Wales revealed non-compliance with PACE's statutory requirements. And the stop and search records that were examined, many of you will know, that did not include sufficient grounds to justify the lawful use of the power. So I think, Victor, your question is quite apt. The Home Secretary announced thereafter a comprehensive package of reforms that should contribute to significant reduction in the overall use of stop and search, better and more intelligence-led stop and search, and improved stop-to-arrest ratios. And as part of this package, the College of Policing would lead a new training program on stop and search for all police officers, and the Home Office would launch the new Best Use of Stop and Search scheme, the BUS scheme. And the Inspectorate would launch, would also include stop and search in annual police effectiveness, efficiency, and legitimacy inspections. The BUS scheme has now become the principal mechanism through which the government is delivering this reform. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a bit. So 20 years on, and despite the rhetoric and various policing initiatives to professionalize the service, the issues that McPherson report identified with stops and searches, in fact, still remain. The fraught relationship between the police and young people from black and minority ethnic communities also remains, leaving the state of police and community relations arguably not any better than it was in the 1990s. And claims made of targeted searches, intelligence-led, evidence-led police powers used with reasonable suspicion, applied accurately, actually haven't amounted to improving the effectiveness of stop and search. And there's indisputable and undeniable evidence, research evidence, that does question the effectiveness of the use of stop and search powers. So the existing evidence indicates that reasonable suspicion is not a sufficient safeguard against misuse. And diluting the, so recently we also heard about calls to lower the reasonable grounds in the use, the suspicion powers that are actually used, which is actually profoundly misguided, and it is detrimental to the legitimacy of the principle of policing by consent. And diluting this requirement leaves it open to abuse and widens discretion. And surely this type of thinking, we believe, is a step in the wrong direction. So as detailed in the Colour of Injustice report, which was recently published, a report by Stopwatch, Release, and the London School of Economics, the long-standing issue of racial disproportionality not only is yet to be solved, but in fact has worsened. So since the last decade, there's been a dramatic use, Victor already said that, in a decrease in the level of stop and search, which is quite welcome. But disproportionality has in fact increased as the use of stop and search has fallen, indicating, and what the data tells us, is that the residual use of powers is more heavily concentrated on black and minority ethnic groups. So black people are now stopped and searched for any reason at more than 8 times the rate of whites. And this is all part of this report. Black people are 9 times more likely to be stopped and searched for drugs. Victor highlighted that in one of the slides. Despite using drugs at a lower rate than white people. And when similar data were analyzed by the same authors in a previous report, black people at that time were 6 times more likely, and that proportion has now changed to 9 times more likely. Arrests for drugs as a result of stop and search fell by 52% for white people, but did not fall for black people. And black people are prosecuted and convicted for cannabis possession at 11 and 12 times the rate of whites. And please note that this statistic is only for the possession of cannabis rather than for supply of class A and B combined. So the point is that if knife crime, gangs, or serious youth violence are such serious issues, then how come we are spending a disproportionate amount of policing time policing vulnerable groups of people for low-level drug possession? So that's a question. The data in London, again, there's a specific section in the report, and I'd really encourage and welcome all of you to go onto our website, which is www.stop-watch.org. And you can download the report and read some of this data. Some of the problems in relation to London, that there are high rates of stop and search in London, undeniable. These are important drivers of ethnic disproportionality because a large proportion, again, there is a bigger population in London from black and minority ethnic groups. But the overall rates of stop and search are higher among inner than outer London boroughs. And the concentration of stop and search in boroughs with high levels of deprivation and inequality fuels this disproportionality because people from black and some other minority ethnic groups tend to live in areas, in certain areas, in relatively larger numbers. But when we use the control for race, it complicates and confounds this general relationship between stop and search and the levels of deprivation. Because if you are white or Asian, then there is a difference. You can be stopped and searched more in the areas where there is more deprivation, but when you move to the more affluent areas, you are less likely to be stopped and searched. But for black people, that story is the same. No matter where you are, either in the deprived areas or going through the more affluent areas of London, you will be more likely to be stopped and searched. So the rates are disproportionate. So the debate and discussion around this issue is often based on deterrence and to deter people from committing crime. But we find that the manner in which stop and search is being used, it is being targeted at people, not places. And that's something that we need to look at. And the proportion of stop and searches resulting in arrest increased from 9%, so there has been a slight increase as a result of using the powers, a slight increase in the number of arrests that have been made, from 9% in 2010-11 to about 17% in 2016-17. And then we look at stop and search, which also distributes out-of-court disposals unevenly across different population groups as well, where black people are subject to higher arrest rates than white people, and they were given out out-of-court disposals at a much lower rate compared to other people, other groups. So there are some, and then of course there's the gangs matrix as well, and working with other groups like Amnesty International and Big Brother Watch, as well as Liberty, I'd welcome you all to read some of the recent reports written around the gangs matrix. I don't need to rehearse them here. Except also to say that many of the indicators used by the police to identify gang members simply reflects elements of urban youth culture and identity that have nothing to do with serious crime. And this conflation of elements of urban youth culture with violent offending is heavily criticized by some of these organizations, including Liberty and Amnesty and Stopwatch. Yet one of the effects of being included on the matrix is to single out the individuals concerned for exceptional police surveillance. So really inviting you to understand what the impact this has on young people from some of these communities as well, who actually have nothing to do with the criminal activity yet find themselves on the matrix. So recommendation, I'd like to pick out recommendation 61 of the McPherson report, which proposed the full recording of all stops and stops and searches made under any legislative provision, not just under the PACE Act, and including non-statutory and the so-called voluntary stops. The record was to include the reason for the stop, the outcome, the self-defined ethnicity, identity of the person stopped, and a copy of the record to be given to the person stopped. So with the introduction of the Home Office's best use of stop and search scheme in 2014, the Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary annual penal inspections on stop and search, there actually have been improvements to data collection nationally, so that's a positive point. However, bus data requirements are voluntary, and there remains important data which is not collected, and changes to PACE code A in 2011 have severely limited on-spot accountability for the person who is stopped. Across, again, in recording stop and search in England and Wales has traditionally been on paper forms, but this approach has been largely displaced as part of the government-led push towards using more technology, and data capture forms have been actually used, and this has actually impeded on-the-spot accountability, which has been made more difficult because you do not actually get a physical record. And then we wonder why complaints also go down, because people don't like to use those opportunities, and then they feel, how will I get it online, will I have to go to the police station to get it, and so on. So there are some gaps. Again, it's great to have the use the bus scheme, But again, there are some limitations in the manner in which the data information being collected is quite patchy and can be variable, and does not allow for a fuller analysis of outcomes to determine if there was indeed a positive outcome. Is it connected to reasonable grounds of suspicion, a chance detection or escalation of the encounter, and so on, because this is what young people are telling us. However, there are gaps in recording that prevent a fuller picture to emerge, and this includes the age of the person stopped, whether handcuffs were used during the stop, during that encounter, whether any injuries occurred, and a record of the substances that were indeed, that are suspected, i.e. name of the drug, whether that was in fact found, and the nature of the suspected offense. Was it possession only or supply? And what was the substance that was found? So we're also seeing, we heard a little bit about Section 60 and the use of Section 60 from Victor earlier. Again, quite problematic. We understand that there is a reason to use that power. But I'm quite puzzled generally when the power is actually used in really huge areas across three boroughs, and it's happening just recently in the last couple of days. And it's really interesting to understand what is the rationale for applying such a power across such a huge area, across three boroughs, for, say, the reason is to address issues to do with violence. And the information that is received within the communities is that we actually have made all of these stops as a result, and we have actually made two arrests for drugs. So what is the use of the power? How is it being applied? And what is the outcome of that? There still remains some conversations to be had about the usefulness of how this is. And although the threshold and the accountability mechanisms, like Victor pointed out earlier, have been increased, they have been tightened, they have become stringent, and we welcome all of that. But then it's not actually translating into practice, because I cannot make sense of that, that across such a huge borough, the reason for applying that power was one, but the outcome, if it resulted in two arrests, and that is being claimed that it was for drugs, then that becomes slightly confusing. The police do not record all stops as recommended by the McPherson inquiry. Stops or stop and accounts refers to those encounters with the police where police officers stop members of the public to ask them an account for their actions, behaviors, or presence in an area, but do not go on to search them. And stop and search, stops and stop and search are on a continuum of police-initiated contact, which means that, you know, they cannot be separated, and members of the public do not actually, when they are in those encounters, do not differentiate between the stop and the stops and searches. That includes traffic stops as well. And while stop and search happens to be more intrusive, the sheer numbers of stop and account as well, as the possibility of abuse, means that it actually has considerable potential, more potential to alienate already alienated communities. And in March 2011, the government introduced changes to PACE Code of Practice A, removing the national requirement to record stop and account and giving police forces the discretion to choose whether to record it. And police forces could maintain or subsequently reinstate the recording of stop and account when there were local concerns about disproportionality. And this is again a, you know, kind of worrying feature, that the hard gain wins that were made on the back of Stephen Lawrence, that we can actually give them away so quickly and without any consultation with the public, that we don't now need to, this ability to be able to also monitor the recording of stop and account being taken away in this way. And so the changes since 2011 have removed a very vital form of redress for individuals who feel they are being unfairly or inappropriately being stopped. The complaint system is now undermined, as there's no proof that the stop in fact took place, thus denying those affected the chance to seek remedy. And earlier in February, I was giving evidence to the GLA, where a young man alongside me was describing his experience, young black man was describing his experience of being consistently and constantly being living now in fear. As soon as he walks out of his door, he will be stopped and searched. And his experience of going to school in secondary school was he had to take a different route because he knew there would be a police officer standing there and he was bound to be stopped and searched. And this happened many times to him. And that made him alter his behavior, change his route to school. Well, why does he need to do that? So there's no explanation as to, you know, why this is what happens and how young people then alter their own behavior and react and respond in very different ways in their local areas where they should be living without fear of being stopped or, you know, it's their street too. And despite the fact that they have never done anything wrong. So by September 2012, only 8 police forces, we're still with Stop and Account, many of those recording overall numbers of stops and the ethnicity of those stopped and not the reason and the outcome to allow for a fuller analysis, that just does not exist. And in 2019, the Met Police also, without any community consultation, ceased to record Stop and Account encounters. And with all of the 43 police force areas now having opted to implement detrimental changes, community's ability to monitor how, in fact, stop and search is being used is, in fact, being hindered. Traffic stops, or 163 stops, as they're called, include stops of vehicles under Section 163 of the Road Traffic Act, which gives police very broad powers to stop anyone driving on the roads without the need for them in a kind of formal suspicion. And these stops are by far the most widely used form of police stop power and represent a significant use of police time, but they are not subject to basic safeguards such as recording and monitoring and fall outside of the stop and search guidance. And in 2016, the then Home Secretary, Theresa May, acknowledged the problem, and she said she promised the introduction of traffic stop recording and action to reduce disparities, and the government's reforms have been too soft in our view and too slow. And the Home Office's bus initiative to improve stop and search still does not include traffic stops and discrimination on our roads continues unabated. The last point is around scrutiny and accountability, and simply making a record of police stops does very little to redress the potential problems with such encounters, and much depends on what the police do with this resulting information. So it's very good to have these opportunities where you can have stop and search monitoring groups, advisory groups in local areas, but it's another thing to actually make them function independently, to actually get some scrutiny done, which actually involves those people who are affected by these encounters on a daily basis, to be able to share the data. And I have been, I have actually attended some of these meetings, and where information exists, but nothing is done to explain it. There is no ability to question the data on disproportionality or the ability of the person responsible. In fact, sometimes it's almost like leading the community with very leading questions, that here is a situation, here is a scenario, and this is what is happening out on our streets. What would you do? Well, actually, the power, you hold the power, the onus of explaining the use of that power resides in you, not in the member of the communities. You know, we are not using that power. Just finishing up now, yeah. So there still remain some of these problems in relation to what is scrutiny and the recommendations coming out of the Stephen Lawrence inquiry 20 years on have given us a lot of things to work on, not just in terms of processes or structures, but most importantly on culture and attitudes and behavioral change. We have done very little to tackle all of that. And really, if I'd just like to end with a question for all of us, and this is the conclusion of our Colour for Injustice report. And I'd really encourage all of you to read this report. It says that given the particular and enduring nature of the problem, specific safeguards are required that target key drivers of disproportionality, and a degree of compulsion is in fact necessary now. As noted by the Equality and Human Rights Commission, ethnic disparities that cannot be convincingly explained and evidenced should be considered unlawful and discriminatory. Part of the problem here is that the again, the inspectorates are simply inspectorates. They are not regulators. And they have the power to secure information, but they cannot give orders for change. And that is speaking to many other organizations as well. Rather than granting police new stop and search powers, the government should honor the pledge made by the current Prime Minister in her role as Home Secretary in response to a very specific question about disproportionality. If the voluntary code does not work, we will introduce primary legislation. So this is our question on behalf of Stopwatch, that perhaps it is time that police consider or government if disproportionality does not improve, and in fact we have shown evidence that it has worsened 20 years on, then maybe it is time to introduce primary legislation. Thank you very much for listening.